The Tom Woods Show, episode 1659.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, by now you've probably noticed that news about the virus is almost always fact-free hysteria these days. So you need my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About the Lockdown. Go pick it up at wrongaboutlockdown.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. We are just emerging from the weekend on which the online portion of the Libertarian National Convention took place. The nominations for president and vice president were decided, and there was plenty of other business discussed as well. And I have with me Miguel Duque, who was a delegate from Washington, and I want to get his thoughts on what exactly just happened. And I tuned in for a little bit of it, but my gosh, this is a long, long proceeding with all kinds of craziness happening. And thankfully, I can turn to people who, like Miguel, spent their time. I mean, really, this is a sacrifice. They devoted a tremendous amount of time to this cause, particularly this weekend. So, Miguel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Tom. Big honor to be here.
All right, now let's get cracking here. Obviously, we want to talk about the presidential and vice presidential choices. But give me your overall impression of what it was like to attend at least this portion of the convention. So, well, also, maybe you can explain what exactly is going to be happening in July, and this was online. Just for people who aren't following the ins and outs of it, what exactly is going on here?
Sure. Well, I mean, for me, this is also new. I'm pretty new to the party, not new to libertarianism by any means. I've been listening to your show for years and years, and so it was a very exciting process for me attending this for the first time. And well, it's very new for everybody for that matter. We really felt like, okay, we're kind of in our own little way making history, because we're the largest party for sure to have ever nominated a president or a vice president candidate in this way. And what was it like? I mean, it was just, you know, it was a grueling, I would say, you know, in many ways, grueling about 24 cumulative hours of being in convention. A lot of parliamentary procedure, Robert's Rules of Order, motions and amendments and such, and you know, things of that nature, and something that has been in many ways foreign to me. So I very much came into it as a newcomer, and actually wound up enjoying the process quite a bit. I mean, we had Zoom open where we were actually having our convention. We had Slack open where we were talking with our other Washington delegates. We had Discord open where we were talking with our Mises Caucus friends. And we had, you know, Facebook messages. It was just a whirlwind to keep up with everything going on behind the scenes and officially in the convention. Convention itself, pretty much what would normally happen at a Libertarian National Convention that happens every 2 years would be basically they update the bylaws of the organization as needed. They update the platform as needed. They elect new officers to the LNC, such as chair, vice chair, secretary, and all the regional representatives and at-large representatives. And then they usually, at the very end, basically they nominate president and vice president candidates. So what we had planned to do for this online convention was strictly to nominate president and vice president candidates, which just in and of itself was very contentious in terms of forming the agenda to do that. As you likely know from talking to Michael Heiss recently, having him on your show, and a lot of the things he talked about, we were going into a very contentious online convention in a lot of ways, not sure what to expect.
Well, let's jump into the discussion of that, because I think that's what's on a lot of people's minds. So first, let's talk about the presidential race. Joe Jorgensen wound up being the winner, which I guess even a month ago, a few weeks ago, even up till quite recently, that would have come as a real surprise to me. And so I want to talk about how that came about. The way it works, apparently, is that they have a series of ballots and you keep repeating that process until one candidate has at least 50% plus one of all the votes cast. Then you have your nominee. So with each round, at least somebody is excluded going into the next round. And then that person has the opportunity to endorse one of the remaining candidates and can very well influence the ultimate outcome. So as you were watching this happen, I mean, what were your thoughts? I heard some people saying, well, this looks like it's going well for Hornberger. And I heard other people saying, I don't think it's going well for Hornberger, because the trouble is, although he's in the lead, he may have alienated the other candidates to the point where when they start being eliminated, they're not going to throw their support to him.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're right, Tom, you know, because I said the exact same thing not even a couple weeks ago, that Joe Jorgensen was one of the people that I expected least to win the nomination. I mean, at the time, we had Judge Gray entering the race kind of late, skipped a lot of the state conventions and jumped into the race and immediately had quite a bit of support. And then not but a week later, when we had talks and then officially Amash jumping into the race. And so it just was really a whirlwind over the past month. And it was probably only 5 days ago or a little bit, you know, before that, after probably certain debates, that it was clear, especially after Amash dropped out, that Joe and Jacob were really the front runners. Jacob had won almost every state convention in terms of the straw poll. And, you know, the delegates are not bound to that straw poll or anything like that. So that's another thing that makes this political process really interesting, is because anything can happen at convention. Anybody could be nominated theoretically at convention and be nominated or receive the nomination on the spot, depending on what the will of the delegates is. And there is a lot of interesting political interplay that happens in between those voting rounds, like you said. So we went into the nomination process with it pretty clear that Jacob and Joe were the front runners. In the first round, they were pretty much neck and neck. And together, I forget exactly what their percentages were like. Together, they probably had at least 60 or 70% of the vote. So it was them and several other smaller candidates. And we basically ended up going four rounds. So each of those rounds, the first, second, and third rounds, different candidates were knocked out, would give a concession speech. Sometimes they would nominate another candidate. Sometimes they wouldn't. Like if I recall correctly, Adam Kokesh dropped out and he didn't endorse anybody. Certain other candidates did endorse other people. So, you know, John Mons, for instance, endorsed Joe, and he endorsed her in a previous debate. So there's definitely just interesting things that happen in between those rounds. And as they proceeded, it was really a matter of, okay, who's dropping this round? And are they going to endorse Jacob? Are their voters going to swing to Jacob? Pretty much the way it wound up happening was in the fourth round, the last round, you know, Jacob and Vermin Supreme pretty much fell behind Joe. She won by less than 1% of the vote. Probably came down to about 10 delegates, because there are 1,054, if I'm remembering correctly, 1,054 eligible delegates. And it probably came down to the votes of about 10 delegates in the end.
Who actually is Joe Jorgensen? For the sake of the audience, I bet a lot of people listening have not heard of her before.
So, sure. And again, being a newcomer to the LP, I've just been along for the ride, learning about everybody, about all the process. Joe, apparently, she's a longtime Libertarian Party member. She was a vice presidential candidate for Harry Brown. I want to say, might have been, I don't remember what year. It was quite some time ago. So longtime Libertarian. She has a PhD in industrial organizational psychology. She's a business owner, grandmother. She somewhat recently came back into the LP to pursue this race. So that's a bit about her. And, you know, I would describe her as, you know, a lot of people listening who haven't really been following LP politics, you've seen figures like Gary Johnson and Bill Weld and Lincoln Chafee and these other candidates who kind of just jumped on board from their you know, political retreads from other parties. She's not exactly that. She hasn't been particularly involved in politics since her days running with Harry Brown, similarly to me. So, you know, we can't really criticize her for that. So yeah, she definitely has a lot of respect from older members of the party due to her association with Harry Brown. And I would say, you know, compared to some of those other people like Bill Weld and Lincoln Chafee, she's quite a bit more radical. You know, she got a B rating, for instance, from the Radical Caucus, which mostly, you know, are the anarcho-capitalists, which the Mises Caucus, of course, has probably a majority of anarcho-capitalists in the Mises Caucus. However, the Radical Caucus kind of represents a different flavor, if you will, of the LP. And they actually like her quite a bit. So overall, our reaction has been, you know, we didn't get Jacob like we wanted. However, Joe is like a pretty solid consolation prize because she was one of the last people that the pragmatists in the party wanted. They did end up endorsing her, but only after about four of their other chosen candidates were set to lose. So we've really come out, you know, making a strong statement with the new sort of resurgence of Mises Caucus members into the party. We've really made a strong statement that this party is not Republican light. It's not libertarian. It's not Democrat light. It's not libertarian light. We are hardcore libertarians. So I think that Joe is definitely a step in that direction.
I've noticed that the people whose names I know well from the Mises Caucus have immediately jumped on board to support her, to make donations to her, to publicize her campaign right away with no hard feelings or anything like that. And from what I can see so far, the feeling is mutual. I don't know that much about her, but I've followed her a bit. The main complaint I hear from people about her is that just by temperament, she's moderate by temperament. Even if in her positions, she's, you know, you compare her to the other candidates running in the Democratic and Republican parties, she's extremely radical. But in her temperament, she's more moderate. And that the times seem to call for more of a fire breather. That's been the main complaint that I've heard.
Well, sure. I mean, there's always going to be different aesthetic preferences, right? And like I mentioned, you know, she's a grandmother. She's, you know, PhD psychologist. So I'd say she's not really a politician like a lot of the other folks that you see involved in the party or in politics in general. I don't think that she's really like a lot of other politicians. To me, even though I'm not an expert in Joe Jorgensen, she comes across as a decent, honest, good person. So I'm definitely giving her the benefit of the doubt. I am really optimistic that these fairly radical views that she holds, that she does stand firm on those. I think what it really comes down to is when our libertarian candidates get put in the spotlight of the mainstream media, there's a lot of heat that comes down on them, you know, and you start to get questions like, well, you wouldn't abolish all welfare, would you? And, you know, you wouldn't make all guns or all drugs legal, would you? And that heat, I think, causes candidates to buckle, and then they start to, you know, stutter, and they're afraid of scaring people. So they start to defend these different statist policies because just basically out of fear, you know, there's a lot of pressure when they get put in that spotlight. So what I'm really hoping for, and I've got my fingers crossed, is that if we do unify, I mean, the Mises Caucus, the Radicals, the Pragmatic, you know, Pragmatist Caucus, if we really unify and we can put some support behind her and cheer her on in being able to spread that radical message, that she won't buckle because she'll feel the support. And I think that, because I look back to my personal liberty hero, Ron Paul, who basically caused me to become libertarian. If we weren't there chanting, showing up in crowds of thousands, chanting, end the Fed, you know, and chanting Ron Paul, you know, President Paul, I don't know if, as amazing as he is, if he would have had the same amount of courage doing everything that he did. I mean, you know, these candidates, they do need our support in order to be able to be bold and spread a bold libertarian message. And I think it's a good sign, for instance, that in Jacob Hornberger's concession speech, when he lost in the fourth round, he and John Mons simultaneously lost. He immediately also jumped to support Joe Jorgensen. He said, along the lines of, Joe and I have been friends for a long time. I think she's a great libertarian. I support her. I hope everybody supports her. And he and the rest of us want what's best for the party and for the movement. It's really not about the party. It's about the libertarian movement and creating a cultural revolution like the Ron Paul days of old. And so that's what we're about. So we're definitely, we're going to keep the momentum going that we have under Joe and also really significantly her vice president candidate. So her vice president candidate is now...
Spike Cohen. Yeah. Now let's get to him in a second. I want to ask you something very bluntly. Why do you think Jacob Hornberger did not win?
Well, as someone who was not really an insider to his campaign necessarily, I can say that it probably just came down to some aspects of his temperament. You know, in certain debates that probably ended up being pretty crucial, he chose to attack Joe and attack Amash in ways that just were not really seen in a positive light, where... Sure, he might have been right about a lot of what he was saying, though he almost like didn't need to go after them really hard. And, you know, there were moments outside of those debates where Jacob was actually saying nice things about all the other candidates that came across as very genuine and very just good-hearted and coming from a good place and wanting what was best for the party and the movement. And I guess just that when he was really going after, and I mean, hey, it's politics, right? So it is a contact sport. You can't exactly blame him for, you know, wanting to point out ways that he's a better candidate. Yet it just wasn't entirely very well received by the delegates.
Yeah, from what I've heard, there's something about just Libertarian Party dynamics whereby, for some reason, attacks on other candidates are just viewed particularly badly. And I remember the first time I really heard the idea that so-called negative campaigning was a bad thing was back in 1988 when George H.W. Bush was attacking Mike Dukakis. Now, Mike Dukakis was the governor of Massachusetts. I lived in Massachusetts. And I thought, he has to negative campaign because everybody's going around saying there was a Massachusetts miracle under Mike Dukakis. And I knew full well, having lived there, that to the extent there was such a miracle, he had to be taken kicking and screaming to do anything that helped bring it about. He wasn't the architect of it. He was very much the unwilling participant in it. So if we don't attack him, how are people going to know? So I never had any problem with this. I never thought there was any – I mean, how else are you supposed to distinguish yourself? You can talk all day long about what a great guy you are, but if the other person isn't as good, I don't see any problem with saying that. But for some reason in the Libertarian Party – there is, I don't know if it's some kind of unspoken code or whatever, this is viewed very, very unfavorably. And so it could be indeed that this wound up hurting him.
Well, sure. I mean, I think part of it is that just a lot of people in the party really do have a lot of emotional investment in the party, and they know that the party has been fractured for a long time. The party really, just as an organization, as a functional organization, has a lot of healing to do, and they're sensitive about that. And so when they see candidates attacking each other, it really sort of triggers some insecurities about this whole libertarian infighting thing that everybody knows is just in the nature of libertarians, yet it's become very sort of toxic and detrimental to the movement. So people are just sensitive about that, I think.
All right, tell me about Spike Cohen, because I'm getting, I don't know anything about him, and I'm getting all different reports about him. On the one hand, people I trust and would do anything in the world for are telling me, this is fantastic, we endorsed him, he ended up getting the vice presidential nomination, this is great for us. And other people saying, he's completely frivolous and off the wall, and he's an embarrassment. What's the truth of the matter? And by the way, I'm delighted to have either or both of these folks on the program so I can find out for myself. But since I'm talking to you right now, I'd like to know what your opinion is.
Well, that's awesome, Tom. And I know that about you. You're very fair. And so my personal opinion, again, as somewhat of a newcomer to the party, not a newcomer to politics, I'm still learning myself about Spike Cohen, though the Mises Caucus is pretty pumped about Spike having won the nomination. because for one thing, you know, he is not by any means, he's not libertarian light. He's not one of these pragmatist types. He's a full-blown ANCAP, voluntarist type of libertarian. He's definitely been friendly with Hornberger and with the Mises Caucus. He and Jacob Hornberger actually did some really cool street campaigning. They went to different neighborhoods in North Carolina and just went and talked to people in their neighborhoods who had never really met a presidential candidate, let alone a libertarian. And he is basically, some of his background, he apparently started a web design company and later sold it. So he's been an entrepreneur. And after doing that, has pretty much just been a full-time activist and media personality, digital media personality. He's got Muddy Waters Media. And he chose to get into the race as VP on Vermin Supreme's ticket. So he's definitely been associated with Vermin Supreme and with his crowd and his following, yet he's been very friendly, building bridges with just about every other faction, if you will, of the party, certainly including the Mises Caucus. So we're definitely excited because we feel like specifically with his addition to the ticket, this is probably the best unity ticket that the Libertarian Party has seen in quite some time, because you've got Jo Jorgensen, who's not really a pragmatist. She's got some of that flavor of pragmatism, though her views are more radical. And then you've got Spike Cohen, who's a full-blown anarchist. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of people in the party and who watch the party who are not happy about that. Particularly, I think where the divide is, and people might get mixed up with this, is that yes, there's the pragmatists and then the principled radical spectrum of the party. Yet there's also, on another level, there's the grassroots of the party, and then you've got basically the Beltway libertarians. And you know, there's that divide too. And so I think Joe and Spike Cohen in particular, they really represent more of the grassroots side. And so there's definitely elements of the party that are not happy about this. But we are.
Yeah, so I've heard. And I've seen people on Facebook say things like, well, who is going to take us seriously when, you know, and other people saying, well, Jo is in good health. She could finish out her term with no problem. I mean, it's nice to hear people being optimistic, but you're living in La La Land if you think that the issue is, if there's a President Jorgensen, would she live out her term so that we wouldn't have to have President Spike Cohen? None of these things are going to happen. I mean, let's just... Could we try to live on planet Earth for a minute? It would be nice. But the other thing I was seeing was people saying, how could we be taken seriously if we have an anarchist on our ticket? But anybody who would be looking at us in the first place is somebody who thinks there's something seriously wrong with the duopoly, the two major parties. I mean, the Iraq War, the lockdowns, and the financial crisis of 2008 are the three big catastrophes of the establishment since the year 2000. And they've been absolutely catastrophically bad on these three things. If you see that, if you're smart enough and alert enough to understand and appreciate that, whatever proclivities the vice presidential candidate of a third party has, it's not even going to be within 10 miles of your thinking. It's going to be, I have to vote for anybody on this planet other than the architects of these disasters. That's the way I think it would shake out.
Exactly. It's really not about getting votes. I mean, definitely if you spend any amount of time in the Libertarian Party, you'll hear a lot of people who speak in those terms where they are really overly focused, I would say, on votes purely for the purpose of ballot access. Because they're really just chasing these means that are not really are the ends that we're seeking. However, really what it's all about is waking people up. And we're not going to do that just with pure protest votes, being just the third option or being some type of moderate or centrist party to just appease people who understandably are dissatisfied with the duopoly parties. We actually have to show them something radically, like a totally new paradigm based on our principles. So that's what's more important in my eyes, is that the Libertarian Party is just all about waking people up, shifting the Overton window. It's not just about getting votes. That really won't get us anywhere in the end, or even winning office for that matter. Like, I tell people this all the time. It's not really just about winning office. If you don't change hearts and minds, people are just going to keep clamoring for more statism. So we have to actually wake people up and change hearts and minds to get people to actually want liberty in the first place.
Let me ask you about one other thing that happened at the convention, and tell me if I got this right. Is it the case that toward the end, the chair took this meeting that was supposed to be dealing with nominating somebody to be the presidential and vice presidential nominees, and the other business is supposed to be taken care of in Orlando in July, including the election of chair, and he tried to move to get the chair issue taken care of during the online portion. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. One of the, or really basically the two, I would say the two most heated, contentious parts of the convention were the very beginning and the very end. We were sandwiched between this agenda of Sarwark and other people who pretty much do his bidding to try to cancel the Orlando convention. They wanted to make it all online. As you know, you had Michael on the show not too long ago. He talked about some of the reasoning behind that, and apparently they were basically afraid the Mises Caucus would take over if we had an online in-person convention rather. And so his agenda was very clear, and it was definitely at the end, after we'd nominated Spike, and it was pretty much come time to adjourn because that was the agenda that we fought really hard to adopt in the beginning. Was to follow the compromise that the LNC had, basically a 9-hour meeting. I forget what date that was. So it was maybe May 9th. They had a 9-hour meeting to schedule this 2-part convention, the first part being online, second part being in Orlando. And then it came time to actually adopt that agenda. And it was very contentious. We managed to get it adopted. Then at the very end, it comes time to adjourn. And different people are trying to push other things into the agenda, to suspend the rules, to do this or that election, like elect the judicial committee of the party, or to probably to sneak in everything else. And it was pretty clear that Sarwark was just going to fight as hard as he could to push his agenda. And people were shouting. It was very, very, very tense. In all the state delegations, I'm sure everybody was just flipping out. And eventually, Sarwark basically decided to hand the gavel off to Alex Merced, who is the vice chair. And before doing that, he said, "Look, I've been the chair of the party for 6 years. I've chaired 3 conventions now." And he basically just, pretty much scolded everybody for even wanting an in-person convention in the first place. Clearly just wanted to pressure the delegates to cancel the in-person convention and to do everything online. He urged everybody, if you want to elect a replacement for me, since I'm not going for a 4th term, I urge you to elect them right now on this online convention. And what else did he say? And he said, "I will not chair an Orlando convention." Basically, those were his parting words before handing the gavel off. And we even had to ask for a clarification, like, is Mr. Sarwark resigning as chair of the party, or is he resigning as chair of the convention? And he got back on the mic and pretty much said, "No, I'm not resigning as either. I'm just handing off the gavel." But he did say that he will not. He pretty much unequivocally said that he will not chair the Orlando convention. We'll see if he keeps his word, because for all we know, he could change his mind and decide that he wants, one last push to try to control everything. So he really showed his true colors in the very end. I think overall, because he lost, basically we outvoted him and his agenda to do that 3-1. We actually did adjourn the online convention with plans to reconvene in Orlando on July 9th through 12th. At the Rosen Shingle Creek Hotel. And basically there's all this verbiage that the Convention Oversight Committee actually put together in preparation for making that motion to adjourn. And sure enough, they managed to make that motion. We passed it 3-1. And I think that Sarwark and his whole little cabal of the party are really licking their wounds right now. I think they're really pretty much, he's going to be finishing out his term just in much shame and disgrace. And I'm personally very happy about that. And I know all the Mises Caucus is happy about that.
What I don't understand is, what is the thinking behind saying I'm not going to chair the convention in July? The delegates decided that's the way they wanted to do it. On what grounds is he saying he doesn't want to do it? I mean, I'm not even trying to be difficult here. I just want to know.
I think that he was just gunning that hard for it to not happen in the first place. And maybe he thought that him saying that was going to sway people or pressure people or scare people into saying, oh, well, we have to do all this now because otherwise we won't have a chair. You know, it turns out.
Well, does that mean the vice chair will run the meeting?
Exactly. And sure enough, Alex came through big time. He did an awesome job basically getting the gavel from Sarwark. He was very fair. He consulted with our parliamentarian repeatedly to make sure that everything that was being done was legal. And, it took some time because basically, you know, this was in total about a 24-hour convention, and it was 8 hours total today to nominate the vice president. Probably, I don't know, two or three of those last hours were over adjournment. I might be slightly exaggerating, though. It was really under Mr. Merced as chair, or as vice chair, rather. And I happen to think he did a great job. We were all really happy.
Well, no, what I mean is, in Orlando, is Alex Merced going to run that meeting?
As of right now, that's how that would work. Yes. If, like I said, if Sarwark doesn't just frivolously change his mind and decide that he is, in fact, going to chair the convention, then it would be Merced chairing the Orlando convention, which we'd
and
be happy
Alex, with. Yeah, I like Alex a lot. He's been a guest a couple of times on the show. Mm-hmm. I took him back in the old days when there were Broadway shows playing in New York. I took him to see my favorite play of all time, The Play That Goes Wrong, and we had a fantastic old time. So I'm going to be sorry to see him leave that position of vice chair because I think he's been very good. I think he is eminently fair, and he does try to see the good in everybody, in all the factions in the party. And I think you'd have to be a really, really self-absorbed not to appreciate Alex because of the spirit in which he does things. There are very few people like him, and I'm going to miss having him around.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we were all, I think a lot of people were disappointed that he was not going for another term as vice chair. So we've got to do our best to elect other good people to that and other LNC positions. Make sure that they're also going to be people who are fair, who are good, solid libertarians, who are honest, and will, you know, help give a voice to the grassroots.
Well, the Mises Caucus, of which you are a member, has its website at, is it takehumanaction.com? It's also lpmisescaucus.com.
Right. Both of those are good.
All right. So I'm going to just check one, though, because I want to see if, did they ever, well, it's loading so slowly that even if this is the correct one, I'm not giving it out. So lpmisescaucus.com. TakeHumanAction.com. The Mises Caucus of the party is doing really important things and has grown and has helped to grow the party itself with a whole bunch of new members just in a matter of just several years. So maybe just a couple of years. It's very, very impressive indeed, and I'm very glad to be associated with it. Are you going to be at the Orlando convention yourself?
I sure will. And, you know, we owe you a lot of gratitude, Tom, for everything you've done for the caucus and for the party. We would love to see you there. Are you planning to be there?
Well, I wasn't planning on there being, obviously, an event in Orlando during those days. And there is the possibility, especially since the country is opening up a little bit, that actually I'll have to be elsewhere. Because the following week begins Freedom Fest out in Las Vegas, and they are still planning to have that. They're having it at Caesar's Palace, and they've been told they just have to make sure that the rooms are only at 50% capacity. but they've always done it that way. That's just the way Freedom Fest is. There's so many events going on. No room is ever really packed. So they're still planning to do that. And I was planning to get there a couple of days in advance. So maybe I could be present for the very first day or something. I'll see if I can make that happen. Because it would be a shame to have an event right in my backyard and I'm not even there. That just ain't right.
We will definitely have to twist your arm and pull some strings and make sure that we get you there.
Let's see how many Mises Caucus people there. I mean, do we even have a ballpark figure of how many expressly Mises Caucus delegates might be in town? Is there any way to know that?
Well, we're doing our best to rally everybody, organize everybody. I would say it's probably safe to say that of the total membership of the party and probably of the total delegation that were elected, the delegates, we're probably about a third, if I had to guess. And most of our people, I mean, they're diehard libertarians. You know, we're all just very excited to reignite the Ron Paul style revolution. And we're all definitely planning on being there. That's why, and three out of four delegates, for that matter, voted to approve this Orlando convention. So most of us, the vast majority of us, are planning to be there.
Okay, so can you try and put a number on that? Just a wild, I mean, what would be the, suppose every single person shows up, Mises Caucus, how many is that?
Roughly. I suppose it could be, the ballpark might be around 300.
Yeah, okay, because I'm thinking, I guess having an event at my house is probably out of the question if it's that many people. Like if it was 50, maybe I would think about it. But anyway, well, all right. Well, anyway, I'll try and be there for at least one day. But well, I appreciate you taking the time to just fill us in on what happened and try and analyze what's going on. And as I said, I'd love to talk to Joe Jorgensen and Spike Cohen at some point in the future here on the show. I mean, I do, in a way, represent a fair number of libertarians who won't know who she is or who might even be skeptical. So I'm the natural, I'm the natural podcast for her to come on to be able to speak to those people, bring them on board, get them excited. So we'll see what we can do. I'm out of town for a few days, but when I get back, I'll see if I can arrange that. But anyway, Miguel, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for today. Remember to pick up my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About the Lockdown. You can go get it at wrongaboutlockdown.com, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.